This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
And I have a thumbs up, meaning we're here live. We're here live with Dr. Jeff Werber, your host for the next 30 minutes here on Pet Life Radio and Instagram Live, here for you, here for your pets. Anything you want to talk about, now is the time to ask. So talk, shoot away with your questions. I did want to talk a couple of things. I wanted to talk about that new H5N1. I just did a segment, actually, for Good Morning Bethany, Inside Edition. I don't know when it's going to air. Maybe it's ready for it. They never tell me. They come to the office, we video, we tape it, and the next thing I know, someone's like, oh, Simon. Oh, really? That was nice. I didn't even know it was on. So anyway, but we're going to talk about that. And I want to talk about, I've gotten some more questions about the Librela. Apparently, it's getting blasted. So I want to talk about that. And I also do want to talk a little bit about dentistry and old dogs. It seems to be a real problem. And maybe we should start there. Have more people join on. And so, you know, we get problems like this all the time. Is that, I mean, think about this. Which dog's probably going to have worse teeth? An old dog or a young dog? Right? Clearly an older dog. And because of that, a lot of people, they will hold back and not get their pet's teeth cleaned professionally. Why? Because they're worried that the anesthesia is going to be a problem. And what we try to do is let people know that, yes, anesthesia is a problem, always is a potential problem, but age itself is not a disease. I'm not going to make a decision based on what to do or not to do based on age. As you know, I've said many times, showed this story about my 15-year-old Labrador. Did a major surgery, 15, and he went to 16 and a half. So age itself doesn't scare me out, but medical condition scares me, which is why I'm sure you know, any time your doctor is going to want to do some sort of procedure, medical procedure, surgical procedure on your pet, they're going to want to do blood work or have current blood work to make sure that everything's okay, so there are no surprises. But if I'm going to make my decision based on that, not just on based on the fact that the dog is 12 years old. So, you know, it's very important because sometimes, and I try to explain to pet parents that the danger of not doing the teeth is greater than the potential danger or anesthetic complication of anesthesia. Doing a dental itself is not dangerous. It is not. There may be some extractions. There may be some gum work that has to be done. But I've never heard of a dog dying because of the dental cleaning procedure or the tooth extraction. Now, could they have problems with the anesthetic? Yes. In fact, just so you know, most complications that we deal with during surgery or procedure are going to be the anesthesia, not the actual procedure itself. I mean, even ugly tumors. I've had dogs that bleed, but I've never, knocked on whatever, never had a dog that bled out because of a problem. We couldn't stop a bleeder in surgery. So that is not the issue. Now, do dogs bleed out because of a splenic tumor and they don't get to it fast enough? And they bleed out? Absolutely. But not because of the actual hands-on surgery. What happens is usually an anesthetic complication. And interestingly, many of those are just routine. Like, I wouldn't say routine, but nothing you can control. Nothing. You can do everything right. And the dog has an idiosyncratic reaction to the anesthetic. And you can have a problem. Or there are times where it could be human error. One of the equipments wasn't working properly. The readings weren't done right. There was a problem that no one picked up. I mean, unfortunately, these things happen everywhere. And fortunately, very, very infrequently, but they do happen. So don't make a decision. Don't hold back and hold back. Why? Because the oral health is really a tremendous problem when there is lack of that oral health, as far as the heart is concerned and the kidneys. And we talk about it all, you know, very often, that we need to make sure that the oral health is good because we want to prevent problems with the heart valves, endocarditis, or the kidney, glomerulonephritis, all potentially starting from an oral bacteria. So it gets you thinking. So yes, oral health care at home is very important, as it is with us. But think about it. We go in for, you know, people always say, but doc, he was in 6 months ago for cleaning. Oh yeah? All right. So here's what I want you to try. I want anyone, you could try this at home. See if it works. I don't want you to brush your teeth for 1 month. What? Not morning, not night, not at all. Let's see what your teeth look like after a month. So you're going to see, remember, if you were brushing your pet's teeth every day or every other day, still okay. And the teeth were needed a dentist every 6 months, then you're pretty unlucky, because you should be able to prevent a lot of that if you're brushing your pet's teeth every day. So anyway, here's a question that came up. New York Yankee, my 16-year, 9-month-old dog has vestibular disease, gets fluid once a week, is managing, massaging of her legs. Okay to do? Would that help a little bit? She's a strong-willed Jack Russell Terrier. Okay, so Jack Russells are pretty strong-willed. What's interesting, usually when they have vestibular disease, it's idiopathic vestibular disease, and it's a problem with the middle and inner ear and the balance and equilibrium, called the semicircular canals, and how they rotate, and the dog's entire equilibrium is cockeyed. So they usually circle to one side, they will fall over to that side. And if you look at their eyes, you'll see what's called nystagmus. That's where the eyes are flickering back and forth. They'll go to one side fast, and it comes slow, fast, slow, fast, slow. And I tell people, if it ever happens, and by the way, we call it idiopathic because it just happens. We don't know why. The first thing I say is grab him by the cheeks, stare into his eyes, and tell me what his eyes are doing. And when they tell me they're flickering back and forth, then that's pretty much a clear diagnosis of a vestibular insult. Now, what do you do about it? Now, also, what happens for 9 months, dog has vestibular disease, getting fluids once a week. Is it been having vestibular, how many weeks, how long has this vestibular problem gone on? Because if it is at 16 year and 3/4 years, right, soon to be 17, then, and it's a Jack Russell, they live pretty long, by the way, then I would say that there is probably something else going on in that middle inner ear, probably a mass. Now, it could be an infection of some sort, but I'm sure that, you know, if antibiotics have been tried. You want to get an antibiotic that will will get through the blood-brain barrier, like the quinolones, like enrofloxacin or marbofloxacin. But if those don't do it, then a CT or an MRI would be in order to see, really, is there a mass or something going on in that ear? And that's probably the diagnosis, the diagnostic that will help at least come up with an answer. Because idiopathic vestibular disease comes on like suddenly, but then it also goes away within a week or two. And they, in fact, I grew up with a white German Shepherd. Her name was Sheba. And my sister who's on this would remember. And she had it a number of times. And every time she got better, except the very last time. Though she got better, she had a permanent head tilt. So she was totally fine in every other way. But she also lived, had a good long life. So anyway, her name was Sheba. So, okay. Let me wave. Steve, how you doing? Don't forget, it's Gordon's birthday today. A bunch of us from high school, Steve, my brother-in-law, one of them, have December birthdays. Our friend Ted is the 12th, was the 14th, Jeff was the 19th, Steve was the 25th, and our friend Gordon is the 29th. So we all got together about 2 weeks ago on a Zoom call. had a blast. We had really just... But it's so funny that so many of us have December birthdays. Okay. Wave. All right. I think I missed a question here. Okay. I hope, New York Yankee, that answers your question. Okay. Now, let's talk for a second about this H5N1. So this is something that has been getting a lot of attention lately. It is an avian flu, a virus. It's avian influenza, and there are a lot of different types, subtypes. This is the H5N1. Now, we in dogs, the influenza that we can vaccinate are H3N2 and H3N8. And in fact, the vaccines that we use now are what we call bivalent. They do both of the H3N2 and the H3N8. And symptoms are mostly respiratory, kind of like as part of that canine infectious respiratory disease complex, CIRDC. you want to remember that, canine infectious respiratory disease complex. So that is something that we can handle with dogs. But many of the avian viruses, avian being birds, have now crossed species. And we see that in mammals, in marine mammals, cattle, dairy cattle are highly affected. Okay. And of course, other wild birds. And what I found very interesting, well, felines, but especially big cats, you know, the cats you'd see out on safari or cats that are in sanctuaries or in zoos, they are also very, very receptive to getting this virus. So we don't know exactly what it is or why it is, but it's multifactorial. And as far as the symptoms, the clinical disease, it's not just respiratory. In fact, when animals get it, cats especially, they can get like neurologic disease, they can get seizure, they can get, you know, GI upset, of course, respiratory, they stop eating, they get really sick, and it is often fatal. In people that get it, it's usually people that are working in those industries where they're working with a lot of these animals that are at risk, whether they're working in a zoo or they're working in a barn or they're a lot of wild fowl birds, then they can get it too. Interestingly, we don't have a lot of cases in people, but here's the scary part. Of the people that have gotten it, and this is not, we haven't had a lot of cases since 2022. So that's good. That's good. But now, because we're learning more about it, we're learning prevention. And prevention, we'll get to in a minute, but that is important. But before that, though, it wasn't common in people. Sadly, 50% of people that got it were died by it. It was fatalities were approaching 50%. So that's pretty frightening. So what do we do? First of all, you know, for me as a small animal practitioner, I am my big thing is the prevention. How do we prevent it? So, and that's a good question, New York Inc. We'll talk about that in a minute. So it's common sense, all right? First of all, if you have indoor-outdoor cats, might be best to go indoor only. Why? What do cats like to chase? What are they, one of the things they hunt? Remember, cats are hunters, and they go after birds. And I don't know if you've noticed this, but we're in our area, we have seen about 2, 3, 4 months ago, we used to see a lot of black crows dead. Now, as all this is coming out with H5N1, I'm thinking, you know what? This could have been it. I knew it had to be some disease. It wasn't like one random bird. It was many. And we get a flock of them in our neighborhood hitting a tree. I don't know if any of you remember Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds, but that's what it reminds me of. I'd walk down the street, look at a tree, and there were like 100 of them. I said, oh my God, I'll be good. Don't crash down on me. But that's what it looked like. If you remember that movie with Tippi Hedren, and that was really a scary movie. But anyway, that's what it looked like. So I'm wondering now, in hindsight, were those dead birds just literally on the street, on someone's front lawns? Maybe it was that virus. So if you have a cat that is going to go after these dead birds, then they are going to get this virus. And so indoor only is great. If you have birds as well, especially like a lot of people that have citizens, which are the big macaws, right? The parrots, the African grays, right? The cockatoos. So what they might do is they like them. They'll perch them outside. With them, they'll be with them, but still they'll tend them outside. And because a lot of these birds, I had friends that had 2 macaws that were house trained. They walked themselves outside and they would poop outside. It was amazing. But that could be a danger. So my solution for now, until we learn more about it, if you can, keep your cats indoors. I have 4 cats, all indoors, and I'm not that worried. And I have no birds, so I really like birds. But if you do have birds, if they're small, like, you know, little parakeets or cockatiels, then love birds, you're going to keep them inside anyway, in their cage. That, you know, that should be safe. So anyway, it's a matter of getting educated. And if you are in such a profession, or if you have a lot of outdoor birds, if you have chickens or turkeys, you might want to start wearing gloves and a mask and eye protection, eye gear, because the mucus and the saliva from these birds that's infective can be transmitted via that way into our nose, our mouths, our eyes. So be really, really careful. And you can, just at least prevention is the key. So talk about the importance of dogs needing to wear a warm coat for going outside. Walk their dogs who aren't wearing coats and boots for their feet. This is very important, especially obviously when you're in cold climates, cold. And remember, in lots of cities, it could be 10 degrees, but with wind chill, it's 10 degrees below. I mean, you get into Minnesota, you get into Kansas during the winter, you get into Chicago, of course, the Northeast, it gets really cold. Wisconsin, look at a Green Bay Packers game. They're playing in 2 feet of snow. So it's very, very important to keep your pets out. Remember, the smaller the dog, the shorter the coat, the more at risk they are. And that's why when you see these cute little dogs running around and they're wearing their little sweaters and people laugh, oh God, I'm just sweating. No, they need it. They do need it. And the same thing with the feet, because a lot of heat loss comes from the feet, because the nose and the pads don't have a lot of protection. So when it's icy out there, or when municipalities put down salt on the pavement and the streets, the sidewalks, that is very irritating. So it would be really wise to get your pets, if they do a lot of walking in these areas, on these kinds of streets where there's chemicals put down, you should have them on little booties and protect those feet. But it is okay when you have these little dogs, especially the smaller breeds and very short hair breeds like the Chihuahuas, like the Dachshunds, right? They are very at risk. Dogs with thicker coats, remember, that thick coat serves as an insulator. It keeps them cool during the hot months, protects them from the heat, but it also keeps them warmer during the cold weather. So it protects them from the cold. And especially the dogs with a thick undercoat, that's what they're built for, like the Huskies and the Malamutes and the Samoyeds and the Akitas. That's exactly what they were built for. So you probably don't need to put them in a coat. But if you really wanted to, or you found a really cute one, or one for the holidays that you don't want to wear, stick it on your dog. That's okay. But anyway, they should have these ugly sweater contests for dogs too. Don't make fun of those dogs that are wearing sweaters and just because it does help. Hello, Stephanie. By the way, Steph, we had a great time in Cabo at this Secret. It was great, great, great. All right. Yes, this is freezing in New York. I'm sure it is. Not freezing. Well, it's all relative. We talk about freezing. I mean, we hit 40 degrees here, 50 degrees, and we're freezing. We complain. So yes, but having been a New Yorker, I do know that yes, it does get cold there. Let's see. Tommy, how you doing? All right, see, Pet Life Radio is with us. Okay, let me, it's time for a break. So we're gonna do this. We're gonna take a quick break. When we come back, I wanna talk a little bit more about the Librela craziness, because I'm getting so many comments. If you wanna learn more about it, stay tuned. We'll be back after these short messages from our sponsors here at Pet Life Radio.
You know the expression, cats have 9 lives. Well, what if you can give them one more? The Give Them 10 movement is on a mission to help give cats an extra life. How? With spay and neuter. Spaying or neutering your cat helps them live a longer, healthier life. And it helps control free-roaming cat populations, too. Learn more about the benefits of spay and neuter and meet Scooter, the neutered cat, at givethem10.org. That's givethem10.org.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
We're back live here on Pet Life Radio as well. So another question came in from Hardwick Mom, and it says, what temp in LA should we put a sweater on a 25-pound Labrador? You know, if they really seem cold, like I have a vast array of dogs, and there are 4 of them are small, ones that are under 30 pounds. Well, 3 of them under 30, one's about 32. And then I have my big Labrador who's 70-something. I don't use sweaters for these guys. I don't think it's cold enough, given the fact that they do have. I'd be curious to know from other, if you think that it would be, if you, let's put it this way. Let me hear from those of you who have small dogs in an LA climate. Maybe if it gets down, it would have to get down to freezing, and it usually doesn't. So that's what I'm thinking. I mean, if would it hurt to do it? No. If you wanted to do it and you don't mind the ridicule, then go for it. I'm just kidding. Can you imagine? Oh, look at that Labradoodle. What a voice. So anyway, I think we complain, but it's cold for us when it's 40 degrees. But for a dog, I don't know. My dogs are outside at night sometimes. If we go out, we don't want to leave them in the house. We'll put them outside. We have a huge yard and they're running around. It's like, you know, it's like being in a dog park. So they're fine. They of course they love to snuggle. Can't wait to come inside the house where it's nice and warm. But I don't think I don't ever see them like, you know, bunched up together shivering. And, you know, again, shivering would be one of the symptoms that they're too cold. Okay. My cat has a virus respiratory in her chest now. She's losing her hair on the two sides of her neck. I'm worried. Ooh, so that is interesting. I'm trying to think of the picture of losing the hair linked to a respiratory virus, other than maybe if she's on both sides of the chest, is she scratching? Is she like, I don't know. I'd have to see it. You can send me some pictures, but watch, see if she's scratching excessively, because the two may not be related. I mean, it could be that she's got something going on in her skin and she's scratching, but I don't know if it's because of a respiratory virus per se. That'd be interesting. I don't know. I don't have an answer. I'd like to see it. I would be looking for other things as well. Now, as far as the respiratory virus, how long has it been going on? I wonder if it is this H5N1. Is the cat an indoor-outdoor cat? Does the cat only stay inside? Do you have other cats in the house? Do you have dogs inside the house that come in and out? Because dogs don't seem to be as susceptible, but the question is, can they actually transmit it in that short time that they are, they pick up the sputum, the saliva, the mucus of the animal that did have it? Can they transmit it? It's a good question. So I would be more concerned about the respiratory virus. There are some antiviral medications that can be used. There are also some ophthalmic viral medications that can be used. So if you have such a cat that has this virus, but again, I'd like to know how old the cat is, and is she up to date on her vaccines, and is she indoor, outdoor? That would be important to know. All right. I know it's almost 2025. We're getting close, guys. The ridicule. All right, let's see. I'm waving. Sweaters in LA, only for aesthetics. Their polyester doesn't help with the cold. That could be true, too. I think you need a really good, get a cashmere. Come on, if you're going to do it, feel it right. Give a nice cashmere sweater. A raincoat on the other hand helps with dirt and getting your mud. That's true. Uh-huh. A raincoat, when it gets really rainy, we don't get tons. No scratching, just coughing. Then if no scratching and just coughing, the hair loss could be more of a problem with digestion and like a metabolic physiologic issue, not getting enough vitamins. There are some dermatitises, if it's bilaterally symmetrical, that have to do with hormone issues and enzyme deficiency, vitamin deficiency, zinc and vitamin A. So there are a lot of reasons that they could lose. If it's bilaterally symmetrical and not itchy, we have to think of things other than allergy. It's usually some sort of hormone deficiency, growth hormone deficiency, sex hormone deficiency. There are other things that it may be. You might want to see a veterinary dermatologist, and that would be important just to get that taken care of. But also, maybe if their ADR because of the respiratory virus and not feeling good, keep trying to work on that respiratory virus. And maybe as they feel better and they get stronger, you might see a change. Does an indoor cat need a rabies vaccine? Oh, I love that question. So my answer is no. Now, is it still required in many states? Unfortunately, yes. So in California, it's not required for cats. so I don't recommend it for indoor-only cats like my own. Why am I nervous about this vaccine? So, I mean, yes, people say to me all the time, well, yeah, but there could be a break-in or there could be a fire or earthquake. Your cat could get out. Yeah, that can happen. But is there a rabid animal waiting outside just in case they knew that house was the house that's going to? No, we don't have that many cases, period, depending on where you live. But if you live in a country where there are a lot of rabid animals and rabies is a known entity, then of course you want to protect your cats if they even remotely can get outside. But here's the issue that bothers me. There is a vaccine reaction called, check this out, feline vaccine-induced sarcoma. It is a cancer believed to start from a feline vaccine. The two vaccines that seem most frequently implicated are the rabies and the feline leukemia vaccine. Now, let's look at the risk of an indoor-only cat getting leukemia or rabies. Now, for rabies, it's got to be the bite of a rabid animal. Well, let's face it, if that coyote bites your cat, I don't think it's rabies that's going to get your cat. It's going to be the bite. So what's less to worry about? Now, if it is a leukemia, then you're for an indoor, well, in general, how do cats get leukemia? It's prolonged direct contact with leukemia positive cat. That means they're sharing bowls. They're eating near each other, sleeping together. They're grooming each other. It's not going to be, someone says, well, my cat sometimes gets out. Even if he meets up with a leukemia positive cat for one day, it's probably not going to give him leukemia. So, or be more careful and keep your cats indoors. But if you notice, the reason why, if you've ever asked, you maybe not even noticed, the reason why we only give cat vaccines now in the thighs is because if they are unlucky enough to get this feline vaccine-induced sarcoma from a vaccine, you can actually save their lives by amputating the limb. Whereas if we used to give cats just like dogs anywhere in the body, any subcutaneous, any place you could pick up some skin and you stick the needle in, if they got that feline vaccine-induced sarcoma, ultimately they had to be put to sleep. There's no way to successfully remove it, but because it gets in, it digs into the body wall. There's no, you'd have to cut the, I mean, yeah, it's a tough one. But if it's in the thigh, you amputate the leg, you save their life. So, but think about it. Do you want to vaccinate for a disease? There's a tremendous likelihood that they'll never get at the risk of having to maybe amputate the leg. I don't know. I don't think it's a good move, but you know, whatever. Now, as I said, if you're in a state that requires it, I guess you kind of have to do it. So my personal feeling is if you can avoid it, indoor only, avoid it. Now, if they go outside, 100% you need the protection. Now, what's the rabies vaccine effects on dogs with ITP? Immune thrombocytopenia or any injectable vaccinations? Well, you know, it's a good question. When there is an immune-mediated problem, okay, I would speak to an internist, a veterinary internist. I would prefer not vaccinating because you already have a compromised system, immune system. And do we want to throw a vaccine? And how much of the immunity is going to be there to respond to the vaccine if it's already attacking, in this case, the thrombocytes? I would double check with your internist of choice. I'll ask two internists I work with very, very closely. Unfortunately, one's on vacation now. I'm not going to bother him for this, but the other one I'm supposed to actually talk today. So maybe I'll ask him that question. What are the internal medicine recommendations when it comes to that? It would have been fun to have you here, Stephanie. Okay, it's Addy Jeff and Walter and George. Talking about cats. She's got two cats. All right. I think that's it. That's it. And I know we're running out. I can't believe it goes so fast. See, you guys get me talking. I can't stop. Would you just, give me easy questions. I can like the one answer. Yeah. Yes. No. Those are the good. No, I'm just kidding. I love the detailed questions. I want to be able to educate to get, it's not just, you know, when you understand something, then it makes sense. If you just have an answer, if I give you an answer and say, don't do it, you don't understand the reason behind it. It does. It's not the same. I want people to really understand. So, all right. Okay. I think we're good. Okay. Anyway, thanks for joining me. Now, New Year's coming up. Be careful. You know, I heard someone ask a question on one of my other venues about fireworks. They wanted to come and pick up some meds for the fireworks. I realized for a lot of people, it's nothing like 4th of July, that I know, but there's a lot of fireworks going on New Year's Eve. So that's Tuesday night. So I would highly recommend if you have such a pet that doesn't do well with the fireworks, the same things we talk about. Give them something to mellow them out. Hopefully you speak to your veterinarian. Keep them in a quiet room with the TV or music going, the windows closed. And it's too late to train them to deal with the fireworks. That's another story. I know we've talked about it before, but I'm happy to do it again. But you need more time. You need a lot more time. So, but that's something we can talk about. Give me about a month or 2 months before 4th of July. It may be in May. Okay. We'll talk about how to try to desensitize your pet against fireworks. But anyway, so have a wonderful New Year's. I can't believe 2025 is here already. Oh God, it's frightening actually. And have a lot of fun, not too much fun. If you're going to be having too much fun, don't drive while you're having too much fun. And we'll see you here next week, same bat time, same bat channel, here on Pet Life Radio and Instagram Live. And during the week, if you have questions, just reach out to me anytime. Would love to help you out and answer them. And I get a thrill out of doing it. It's fun for me, and hopefully it helps you guys out as well. All right. So enjoy the rest of your day. If you like football, there's a lot of good football on. And we will see you next week. All right. Take care. And happy New Year. And by the way, for those of you celebrating Hanukkah, still got, let me see, today was number 4. So we still got Sunday. No, that's Sunday. We need Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. 4 more. Very rare that Hanukkah starts with Christmas and it goes just past New Year's. So anyway, keep lighting those candles and have a lot of fun. Lots of presents for the kids. All right. Bye-bye.
Let's Talk Pets every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.